Hello and welcome to Health Fact versus Fiction, brought to you by HCA Healthcare UK. I'm Anna Richardson, and this is the podcast where we uncover the truths and bust the myths about your health with some of the country's leading consultants. Whether it's falling over, falling off a bike, or walking into something, the chances are we've all banged our head at some point in our lives. But just how dangerous can a bump to the head actually be? On this episode of Health Fact versus Fiction, we're finding out all about concussion and getting to the truth behind the damage a head injury can cause. Concussion is the most commonly reported injury in rugby union in England, and across all sports, governing bodies are taking concussion ever more seriously. Later on, I'll be speaking to someone with first-hand experience of it on more than one occasion, former England rugby star Kieran Bracken. But concussion is something that can affect us all. So joining me throughout the podcast is Dr. Richard Sylvester. Richard is a consultant neurologist who provides concussion assessments for the Institute of Sport, Exercise and Health, which is supported by the Princess Grace Hospital, part of HCA Healthcare UK. Richard, hello.
Hello.
Now, we always start our podcast, Richard, with a little bit of quickfire myth-busting. So please can you tell me whether the following statements a health fact or health fiction? No looking at your script, cheat. Okay, number one. You only get concussion if you have a direct blow to the head.
Fiction.
Really?
Yeah, so it's actually, we think that concussion is where your brain rapidly moves in your skull. So a whiplash type injury where your neck moves quickly, caused by possibly a blow to the chest, or even just falling awkwardly, could cause shaking of the brain without a direct blow to the head.
Oh, that's really interesting. So effectively, it's the brain moving inside the skull that can cause that injury.
Absolutely.
If you're playing rugby, wearing a skull cap doesn't protect you from concussion.
Fact.
So why wear one?
Well, it protects your face and ears from becoming like a rugby player's, which might be something you want to avoid. But, you know, it really doesn't affect the movement of the brain inside the skull, which is the primary injury with concussion. And in fact, there's quite a lot of evidence that wearing protective headgear actually increases the rate of concussion.
Question three, Richard. The most important thing to do after a blow to the head is not to fall asleep. Surely that's fact.
That's a tricky one, but I think it's probably fiction. So I think there's some basis behind that. So one of the things that I certainly worry about, and clinicians worry about after head injuries, if people become drowsy. And I suppose the idea is that if you're asleep, it's difficult to assess your level of drowsiness. But I think that going home and staying up all night, making sure you're fine, is really not the right thing. And I would always suggest that if someone's had a significant head injury and has any worrying symptoms afterwards, they need medical assessment rather than
a good sleep.
Or no sleep, which is probably going to make you feel even worse the next day.
So, Richard, let's start with the basics. What exactly is concussion?
Well, that's not really the basics. It's probably the most difficult question in here. So I think over the years, concussion's meant different things to different people. So concussion historically was thought of as an injury to the brain, but it's also been used to describe the symptoms that you get when you've had a knock to the head. And I think over time, what we really think it is a transient disruption of how the brain functions due to this mechanism of the brain being moved rapidly in the head. What concussion isn't is bleeding in the brain that we can see on a scan, a seizure, or a brain injury that doesn't recover relatively quickly. But the trouble is with concussion is at the moment, there's no way to objectively diagnose it. There's not a special blood test or a scan. And it's really a clinical diagnosis on the basis of symptoms people have. And certainly in my clinic, I often see people that have had an injury, have been diagnosed with a concussion. In fact, it's something completely different.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's lots of important stuff around your head and neck. There's your eyes, your ears, your balance system.
Yeah.
And there's lots of muscular, skeletal things. And the overlap with the symptoms that you can get with concussion and other things is quite high. So one of the key problems in this area is how to differentiate a mild brain injury from something more severe, because it will look the same on the rugby pitch, for instance, at the beginning. It's just that a concussion gets better, and somebody who's had a much more serious injury will probably get worse.
So I think it's fair to say that most of us have had a knock to the head, or we've fallen over. I fell off my bike as a student and knocked myself out. But how do you know if you are, in fact, concussed? What are the symptoms?
Well, I mean, there's some things that would immediately make a diagnosis of concussion clear. So, for instance, if you lose consciousness, that's something going on in the brain. There's no other bit of your body that makes you stay conscious. But actually, about 90% of concussions or diagnosed concussions, people don't lose consciousness. There are other things. Sometimes people might have seen in footage from sports or in matches that someone will have a hit to the head and then get up and be completely off balance and look like Bambi for a few seconds. And that, again, we think is a brain issue. But then the other symptoms are a bit vaguer. So they can be confusion, not knowing where you are, dizziness, headache, blurred vision, problems with your conscious level, being drowsy, being over-emotional. And all of these things, you know, could happen with a head injury without concussion, potentially. So it can be very difficult to assess. And that's one of the reasons why the assessment that goes on in sport now can take quite a long time. So we think that the longer you spend assessing someone, the more likely you are to make the diagnosis.
And how long does concussion last generally?
So in my experience, I see lots of different people. I often see people that aren't getting better, so I probably have a warped view. But the vast majority of rugby players that I see, for instance, feel better within 48 to 72 hours, actually.
OK, so you'd expect it to start to feel much better within a couple of days.
Normally people feel pretty awful the day after, and then things improve relatively quickly.
So a bit like having a really, really, really terrible hangover.
In fact, that's very much how people describe it, yes.
So I've just had a series of concussions then, presumably.
Throughout your life.
Yeah, throughout my life.
One thing that often happens is that people have head injuries while they've been drinking,
yes.
Unsurprisingly. And what they often say to me is that they woke up the next morning thinking, God, I've got a bad hangover, but then it just doesn't go away. Usually, by the next morning, it's better, but if it continues at that point, the penny drops.
Yeah. Can concussion cause lasting damage at all?
Well, again, that's a really important question. And the answer is that we still don't really know. We think that a single concussion is probably not going to cause long-term damage. But really, the concern is about repeated concussions. Mm. And that really would be unusual in the general population. You know, we're all unlucky to fall off our bike or to hit our head on the door and get knocked out briefly. But for that to happen numerous times, I think we'd be looking at some other reason there. But in professional contact sport, that is what's happening. And there is increasing concern that that may have long-term effects on your brain health. And we've known for over 100 years that professional boxers have a higher rate of developing certain forms of neurological disease, such as Parkinson's disease and dementia. So this isn't a new thing, but really what's new is that concern is not just in boxing, but it's in other sports such as American football, soccer, and rugby. But really what we don't know is the scale of that problem, whether there are risk factors for individuals that put them at higher risk. And really, at the moment, I certainly don't advise rugby players to stop playing when they've had a couple or even a few more concussions, unless there are ongoing problems.
Let's just talk about treatment. So what can we do if we do experience concussion?
If you're in a situation where you're at risk of further head injury, you need to be removed from that situation. So that mainly applies to sport, but also things like cycling. I wouldn't get back on your bike. We really think that there's an increased risk of further injury after a concussion immediately. And that's not surprising. Your brain's not working properly. Your coordination, your timing, your decision-making. So that's the first thing. All of the major sports have really good guidelines of how to manage concussion without the input of a medical practitioner, which is what most of us have day to day. And those can be followed by non-sports people. I think they're very useful advice. And really what the advice is for the first 24 or 48 hours is to really take it easy. We used to tell people to do absolutely nothing, but that's quite hard, especially in this day with so much electronic gadgets. And interestingly, footballers, after a concussion, I don't know if you know what footballers do when they're not playing football.
Go on.
They play football on their PlayStation and Xbox.
Oh, do they?
Non-stop.
Right.
And that's quite a good stimulus for making you feel worse after concussion. So we advise people to maybe not use their screens so much.
So people are in this day and age, people are automatically actually just turning to their screens to continue keeping themselves stimulated and active.
And I think that just generally makes you feel a bit worse. There's not really any evidence that makes your recovery more prolonged. But the idea is that you kind of get your brain to rest for a couple of days, then when you start feeling better, start gradually reintroducing normal activities. And for most of us, that's going to be studying or work. And for sports people, that's returning gradually to their sport.
So there's no treatment per se. It's basically try to do as little as possible and then reintroduce daily activity.
Yeah, I think the more specialist treatment comes in for people that aren't recovering. Mm. And what we know is that if you take a group of people that have had a concussion, on day one after the concussion, they'll all feel awful. Mm. If you then take that group of people about 6 weeks down the line, about 90% of them will feel completely back to normal. But that still leaves 10% of people that don't. And really, that's a lot of the work I do, is working out exactly why they're not feeling back to normal and treating them. And, you know, there's quite an unhelpful medical term of post-concussion syndrome.
Oh, really?
Which I avoid completely.
Oh, okay.
And basically, post-concussion syndrome just describes people that haven't got better after concussion. It doesn't really help understand what's different about them. And really, in my experience, concussion's an extremely good trigger for migraine. So you can develop really nasty migraine headaches. And they often require specific treatment by a neurologist or someone who knows how to treat migraine. The other thing that's very common is damage to the vestibular system. The vestibular system is the balance system that kind of links your head, eyes, and your positioning in the world. And if that's damaged, which is really much easier to do than the brain because it's very sensitive and it's just in your ears, it doesn't have your big skull protecting it. If that's damaged, people feel awful, and that really doesn't get better on its own frequently, and they require special physiotherapy and rehabilitation.
Well, I was going to say, if that's the case, then, that somebody isn't recovering from their concussion, then what are the options available then? So it's medication, depending on what the symptoms are.
Well, I think the key thing is diagnosing why. Mm. So saying something's post-concussion syndrome doesn't tell you the diagnosis and the treatment. So, you know, is it migraine? Is it vestibular disturbance? Is it a psychological problem? So frequently people have had a head injury and then develop really low mood and anxiety. And then if they're feeling awful and being told they should be better, it makes it even worse.
Which makes perfect sense, doesn't it? That there's going to be some kind of emotional problem post that kind of trauma. You've had a head trauma.
Yeah. And we definitely think that damage to the brain, even transiently, can put you more at risk of psychological effects from the direct effect of the injury.
Richard, you're now working with sporting bodies like the RFU and the FA to improve protocols around concussion. So just tell me a bit more about that.
Basically, there's two bits to it. So one is the FA and the RFU approached me as a brain injury expert to set up a clinical service for elite athletes who've had concussion or who have had long-term problems after concussion or who are concerned about their brain health following a career in contact sport. And what we've done is set up a clinic with a number of experts in different fields who all can help in this situation. And we see lots and lots of athletes, probably mainly from the world of rugby, but actually from winter sports, from ballet, unluckily falling over,
all other. Oh, wow, you would have thought that. That's fascinating. Yeah. So you're seeing
a whole range of elite performers.
Wow.
So that's one aspect. And that's been really, it's an evolving process. I think our knowledge of how to deal with this thing really is growing, and it's not by any means a done deal. And then the other thing is really trying to advise the governing bodies of sports on their protocols and guidelines for managing concussion using the latest scientific evidence. And also the evidence that we know from non-sports brain injury, which is we've been studying a lot more for a lot longer. And that's been a challenge. I think the governing bodies have taken this very seriously in rugby for a few years, but some of the other sports are having to catch up. and have their own challenges.
Well, that leads me beautifully onto my next guest. Kieran Bracken played 51 times for the England rugby team and was part of the 2003 squad that won the Rugby World Cup. Yay! Kieran, you've had more than your fair share of injuries during your career, I think it's fair to say. Talk to me specifically about your experience of concussion. What does it feel like?
It's quite scary. I first got knocked out when I was 18. I was in a trial game and I literally woke up, didn't know where I was. And I think it's a feeling of confusion. Also, unsteady on my feet, but also not quite sure where I was in the country, what day it was, that sort of thing. So it's a very strange sensation. And if I was to sort of boil it down to, for those who haven't had it, what does it feel like? It feels like you've had 12 to 15 pints with a load of shots. You don't know where you are. You don't know what part of the town you're in. It's literally that bad. It's that confusing. I ended up getting sick pretty much within an hour of being knocked out. I was green. I was confused. I didn't know where I was and who people were. So it was a very bizarre scenario for me. But at that time, we're talking, we're talking 25, 30, nearly 30 years ago. So it's advanced. And I can tell stories about the different concussions that I had on the way. I had the consecutive concussions, which is the dangerous one, which I experienced. But the thing is, over a 17-year period of playing rugby at the top level, I got it five or six times. So not that many, but those who have had it, some of us have recovered well and some haven't. And it's quite an interesting science.
Which, of course, is what Richard's alluded to, is that 90% of people, will basically get better, but it's going to be that percentage that really doesn't. Mm. But talk to me about the year that England won the World Cup in 2003, because earlier on in that year you had been concussed. So are those the serial concussions that you'd experienced?
Yeah, so I'd had it since the first time when I was 18, and I knew what it felt like, and I understood. To be honest, at that time there was no return to play. It was literally, I got concussed during a game and you just carry on. I was captain of a team. You just carry on. You're a gladiator. It doesn't matter how you feel. And so I didn't know any better. But, as years gone by with the concussion, took it a bit more serious. But in the World Cup year, I got knocked out and came off, got sick, and I knew exactly what it was. I got a concussion. But interestingly, I ended up playing the following week. And I just remember during the match, I everything was all almost slow motion. I was a bit confused, even though I had trained in the week and I was knocked out the week earlier. And I hit somebody quite hard, and it wasn't my head that touched him at all. It was actually, and now I know from what you're saying, Richard, it was almost like a whiplash effect. And I now understand that a concussion is a sort of a shaking of the brain within your head. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a head-on-head contact. And it's actually a whiplash can have the same effect. And I suddenly felt really weird. And I suddenly got a migraine. I never had a migraine. I got this migraine from hell, and I couldn't see out of one of my eyes.
And you're still playing?
I'm still playing. So I went to the side of the pitch. I said to the doc, I said, I've not been knocked out. I know I've not been knocked out. I've not had a hit to the head, but I can't see half the ball. And I'm a scrum half and I'm trying to pass the ball. I can't see half the ball. He says, well, you've got a migraine, haven't you? And I said, OK, so what do I do? And no one kind of said, well, last week you were knocked out. Therefore, it's, consecutive head injury. It was like, well, can you carry on with it? And I was like, well, yes. And the good thing about the migraine is, Richard know better than me, but everyone has them differently, but we get the flickering of light. Mm. And so I couldn't see to one side, and then it actually changed to the other side, and this flickering light sort of went away, and I played on, and then I felt sick afterwards. I felt terrible, but I didn't necessarily put two and two together and say, last week I was knocked out, this week I've got a migraine. It was just, well, you've got a migraine. And then I played the following week. Now, I felt a bit weird that following week training. So as soon as, I think that the reason why they ask you not to do anything, you don't want to get your blood pressure up and get the blood moving and get every, the circuit going, and they want you to rest as much as possible. But for me, because I had a migraine, it was like, well, it wasn't concussion. Right. So I trained in that week and I felt terrible. And so I went to a specialist, had a scan, and the scan sort of didn't show anything, which the rugby players had a bit of banter about, didn't show anything in my head. But what was interesting, the specialist, who I don't think was a sporting specialist in concussion, was a brain surgeon. looked at the scan and said, I can't really see anything, although, you know, there's a slight shading there and it could be an old injury, it could be from birth, it could be... But if I was you, I wouldn't play rugby anymore if I was you. And I was just
ever.
Went, ever, ever. And I said, I was like, really? He's like, well, do you want to be in a wheelchair? You know, do you want to risk your life for the sport that you love? So there was a World Cup round the corner. And actually, I don't blame him. I got on the tube, I was shocked, I came home and I was upset. I said to my wife, he told me I should retire from rugby. And I think it was a case of almost uneducated in the sense that, you know, I don't think he even knew. But obviously when you're a doctor and you're advising someone on, you know, what they should do, they're gonna least resistance. Listen, don't take any more... You know, any
knocks
more,
or shakes.
Any more knocks, yeah.
So do you think that, is it fair to say that perhaps concussion wasn't taken as seriously or perhaps wasn't understood as well 15 years ago as it is now?
It wasn't understood. And I think, you know, if I was to have gone to someone like Richard who could explain what's happened and what the potential outcomes are, you know, and what to look for. I mean, to be honest, every time I had concussion, I always played the week after, and that's the worst thing you can do. Now it's nothing for a week. And the great thing is my eldest boy got concussed a month ago. I was absolutely amazed at the protocol. And he was in training. He wasn't knocked out, but he sort of got up a bit unsteady. And they said, right, off the pitch. And then they phoned the next morning, how'd you feel? And they said, right, no exercise, nothing, not even rugby, for the next 2 weeks, which was brilliant, which is absolutely great.
How do you feel now, though? Do you worry a bit about the amount of times you've been concussed?
Well, the good thing is I don't think that over a period of time of 17 years of playing at the top necessarily would have had lasting damage. Although for the last 5 or 6 years, I got worried about my short-term memory and long-term memory, faces, names, and that sort of thing. And I remember I sold my house and we rented somewhere for a year. And for 6 months, there was a code on the outside gate to get in. And after 6 months, I forgot the code. And I thought, this is not right. And I was forgetting names and forgetting things and doing things twice and whatever. So I got in touch with the RPA and I...
Who are the RPA? Just explain.
The RPA are the Players Association, the Rugby Players Association, where we all pay our subs each year and basically they supposedly help us post-career or during career. And I explain, I'm a bit worried that I've had these knocks to the head and I'm a bit worried. Nowadays, I'm not as sharp as I was, but my short-term memory, things don't... Because I couldn't remember my mother-in-law's first name. I was so embarrassed. I was introducing her to... She's lovely, by the way. You know, it's great if they're not very nice, but she's lovely. And I was introduced to someone. I couldn't remember her name. And I was like, that's not right. So I went and got tested, and it was a grueling, on Harley Street, 2.5, 3-hour testing where they put you through all sorts of tests, which is great. And they came out and said, we think you're okay, but there's a slight recall on your memory that isn't great, but that not necessarily from the knocks to the head. So you've got a clean bill of health-ish, and we're not discounting stuff, but there is an underlying slight thing we're slightly worried about, but it's not the end of the world. So I was like, well, that's okay. And then because I knew I was doing this, I was reading up on a lot of other people and their stories, and my story is similar to theirs. And, you know, years to come, who knows? The problem is it's so hard to evaluate as a neuro, you know, scientist to know what's going on, because everyone's different and you can't see inside their head. So how do you...
And how old are you now?
I'm 47.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I can't remember codes on doors, or indeed, in fact, I don't know why I'm here. So, Richard, what are the measures now taken to actually protect players?
Well, there's a few. So I think a lot of the focus has been, as Kieran was saying, on really recognising concussion, removing people from putting themselves at more risk immediately, and then, you know, having amount of time that we think will be enough for the brain to recover. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, that what you said about not feeling okay during the week and then playing and not being right, I hear a lot. Mm-hmm. So, and there is a bit more evidence arising that even when people feel fine, their brains might not be working, and it could take a bit longer than we think, you know, up to sort of 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, really?
Mm.
I think what was interesting listening to Kieran there is he said that, you know, his eldest son also plays rugby and that he experienced a mild concussion recently.
Mm.
As a parent, if our children want to play rugby or box or any other sort of contact...
They're mad.
Well, how worried should we be?
So, I get asked, that's probably the commonest question I get asked, actually. And, you know, would you let your kids play rugby? Would you let your kids box? I probably wouldn't let them box, to be honest, because I think boxing, the aim is to punch people in the head. Yeah. Rugby, the outcome might be, but yeah, it's not the aim. And what I say really is that, you know, at the moment, the level of evidence linking a few concussions with later problems in life is really not huge.
It is a contact sport. It's meant to be. It is dangerous. And you take those risks. I'm more worried about my boy learning to drive and being on the streets in a car. Yeah. You know, so you do take these risks. But I think it's the important thing is learning about it and understanding what we can do about it to make sure that we give them the best chance of not, you know, lasting damage. And what I like to see is, you know, less contact, you know, in training, so they're less likely to get the bangs, leave it for the game, you know, the games of rugby itself, rather than just having necessarily a process where if you get it, this is what you do.
And are there very strict protocols now in place for children if they are going to be playing at rugby or contact sports?
There are, but, you know, what I would say to parents is that I would make sure that the club or the school do have, you know, protocols so that these things are managed properly, because I think you know, it's one thing being at the elite level where there's videos that spotted people, you know, getting knocked out, which was missed by everyone else. But I think, you know, every weekend up and down the country in lots of contact sports, concussions are happening and they're not necessarily getting diagnosed. And people, you know, Kieran's description of wanting to play in the next game, you know, that still happens at a lower level. People don't want to admit.
Well, Kieran, you coach 16 and 17-year-olds, don't you? So how do you reassure them and their parents?
Yeah, well, I'm fortunate coaching at St. Albans School, and my eldest boy is there now. And back to what you were saying earlier, from a coaching perspective, when one of your best players gets a head injury, as a coach, you sort of really need your best players on the pitch. And when they come off, you've got this sort of, you've obviously got to look after them, and as soon as they mention the head, you just think, oh no, please don't say it's a head injury. And there's that pressure because you want to win and you want to do well. And I can see it, I imagine all these coaches up and down the country being on, you know, where they should be looking after these kids. Actually, there's their sporting sort of competition where they actually want to win. And I understand when I was playing and what it was like. It doesn't matter how bad you feel, you've been knocked out. Get on the pitch and win the game for us. You're one of our best players. And I find that as a coach, when a player comes off, they've got a head injury, you're kind of like, please, do not mention the head. Just say, is it your head or not? As soon as they say the head, myself and my coach say, well, off, you're out for 3 weeks. But the kids know that they're going to be out for 3 weeks. And do you know what they do? They fake it.
Oh, really?
They fake it.
Well, because they've got that winning ambition that they
know,
you had.
They know that if they mention the word head injury, that we will take them out of sport for 3 weeks. They know they'll miss the final a couple of weeks. They know they will miss the rest of the season if there's 3 or 4 weeks to go. So they actually fake it as well. They'll have a head injury and they'll sort of come off and you go, you're all right, you're a bit groggy. And they go, no, it's my knee, sir. And you're like, no, it's your head. And we just take him off.
I was going to say, as a coach then, presumably, you know, a professional coach, you have to take it out of their hands.
Yeah, take him off.
And I think what we've realised is that the player is in the worst position to make the decision. The coach is probably in the second worst position.
Yes.
And
yes,
the independent medical staff are really the people that should be doing that. And one of the reasons this clinic was set up was that I don't really care if someone plays rugby next week or football or hockey or whatever. I mean, I totally understand sport and I love sport, but, you know, my view is that the health of the player is all I care about in that situation. So that quite often people are brought to see me where there's a bit of a conflict between their views, the club's views and the medical view. And, you know, I'm asked to make the make the decision. The biggest thing that I'm concerned about is that when someone's had a head injury playing rugby and then they're confused, you don't know whether it's a concussion or whether they've actually had something much more serious, like a bleed in the brain. It looks exactly the same. So although that's a rare occurrence, it does happen, and I've seen that a few times in my career. So I think that the key thing is, initially you don't take any risks, you know, someone comes off, and then when the dust settles, you know, you can try and work things out. And at the moment you know, it may have gone the other way in professional sport, maybe over-diagnosing it. I think we probably are. But until we have better measures, which are coming, there's going to be saliva tests, possibly pitch side.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, what would that show? I mean, what would a saliva test show?
So, some of the substances released from damaged brain cells actually go into the bloodstream and saliva very quickly, we think. And it may be that you can measure that very, very quickly afterwards. Probably not in quickly enough to say, no, no, you're fine, go back on the pitch, because I wouldn't advocate that. But, you know, you might be able to do that within the next few hours and then say, actually, you know, maybe your initial injury was not a concussion, it was the balance system in your ears that was affected, or you had a migraine, something like that.
You mentioned earlier that wearing a skull cap isn't going to protect you from concussion. Just expand a little bit more on that. Why wear one then?
Well, I think there's probably a perception amongst players that it might protect you for a start. But, I mean, skull caps do protect your scalp and your ears from localised injury, and your face to an extent. And rugby players obviously are very concerned about their appearance. But, you know, the problem with concussion is not necessarily a direct blow to the head that we've already discussed. And a skull cap might have some effect on the force of a blow. It might dissipate some of the force of a blow, not very much. But it's not going to have any effect on the movement of the brain when your head moves very rapidly when you either have a blow to the head or to the chest. So we don't think, and the evidence suggests, that there isn't really any reduced concussion rate wearing skull caps. There's also evidence that actually you might behave more dangerously because you're wearing something that you think protects you. And certainly that's the experience from boxing, where for many years amateur boxers wore much bigger head protection than they do in rugby. And actually, taking those away has reduced the risk of concussion by about 50%, which sounds completely counterintuitive, but is fact.
So does that also go for people on push bikes?
Well, OK, so the evidence with cycling is quite complicated. So bicycle helmets probably do protect from head injury at low speeds, up to about 12 miles an hour. So that's really not going very fast on a bike. But in big studies of whether people wearing cycling helmets get more or less injuries than others, it's actually about the same. And that's probably because, again, their behaviour is different. And possibly drivers' behaviours are different. When they see people wearing cyclists, they feel maybe they can be a bit more aggressive because they're safe. Who knows? So cycling helmets, I cycle everywhere, and I do wear a cycling helmet, even though the evidence around them is not amazing.
Former England rugby player Kieran Bracken and Dr. Richard Sylvester from the Institute of Sport, Exercise and Health. Thank you both very much indeed. You'll find more about what we've talked about in this episode on our website, hcahealthcare.co.uk/podcast, where you can also learn about HCA Healthcare UK's world-class, award-winning private hospitals, specialist clinics and private GP services across London and Manchester. And if you're listening on your favourite podcast app and like what you hear, why not leave a review? We'd love to know what you think, and it helps others find the podcast more easily. Health, Fact versus Fiction is presented by me, Anna Richardson, and is a Bengo Media production for HCA Healthcare UK.